In New York City, there's a lot of plastics. You'll see them because people are still using plastic bags and then there's still takeout containers. But we're trying to change behavior so that there will be less plastics. And that's what Skip Stuff is for. So when you order food, it's not asking them to give you more stuff like utensils and then those ketchup packets if you don't need them. So less plastic going your way, less plastic in the ocean, less plastic in the neighborhood.
Welcome to Ecophonia. If saving the planet sounds a little bit daunting, it is. I feel that way too, so I'm talking with experts across industries and across the country to really get to the root of how change is made in order to help you learn ways to make the world a better place. I'm here to investigate what really makes the biggest impact and to connect you with real people who already have their feet on the ground. For today's episode, I connected with an organization called Surfrider, a nonprofit with chapters all across the country dedicated to the protection and enjoyment of the world's oceans, waves, and beaches for all people through advocacy. I spoke with Mo McGalley, the chair of the New York City chapter. I was actually able to attend one of their beach cleanups taking place in Rockaway Beach, New York. This is actually located really close to the JFK airport, so you can hear planes flying over the entire course of the interview. As one of the big purposes of this show is to lower the barrier to entry to advocacy by showing different paths as gateways, I started out by asking Mo how he got involved with Surfrider.
So I'm Mo McGalley. I'm the chair of the Surfrider NYC. I've been involved with Surfrider for over 10 years. I started out as a volunteer, joining up in beach cleanup like we're doing today, and then eventually got into an EC role leading the youth program, and about 4 years ago got elected chair.
What drew you to Surfrider?
I'm a surfer by training, so I like surfing and I like working with youth. So I thought that was a great combination of like advancing an environmental aspects in terms of like youth development. So one thing that we'd like to do is we want to create or establish the next generation of ocean advocates. And the one way to do that is to kind of get them engaged into surfing so that eventually they would want to love the ocean and then kind of protect it. So what drew me to do that is the community that Surfrider has created, the initiative it's kind of like leading, and then also the opportunity to really think about how to create the next generation of ocean advocates.
Awesome. So I guess, can you explain to me what the primary goals and mission of Surfrider are?
Yeah, so Surfrider, just to kind of give a bit of a background, it's a national organization dedicated to protecting the ocean, beaches, and waves. So we do this through campaign, programming, and advocacy efforts. Here in New York City, our main goal is to protect the Rockaway Coast. And then we do that through campaigns. We advance legislations to, you know, mitigate plastic pollutions, improve ocean protection, and then to kind of create a better, coastline for New York City. On top of that, we also do programming. So programming to promote resilience and then also to mitigate plastics. So we do dune planting, ocean-friendly garden restaurants, and then some other initiatives around improving the coastlines. And then the last thing is advocacy. So we build community to advance legislations. We lobby to pass bills in the New York State and New York City laws.
Awesome. So I'm going to want to ask some more in-depth questions about those. But for the moment, you guys collaborate with other environmental organizations, correct?
Right.
So can you just explain how you collaborate and what you guys do with other organizations?
Yeah, so mostly for advocacy efforts. So we cannot push a legislation forward on our own. So it's better to build a coalition around it. So we partner with like-minded individuals and organizations that has the same passion that we do or alignment into the mission that we are trying to achieve. So in establishing those partnerships, we're able to generate a larger coalition of individuals that can really back the legislation forward so that there is an opportunity to kind of pass them. So like Skip the Stuff, it's a new legislation that we passed here in New York City. We were not able to push that alone. We had a consortium of like organizations that are pushing legislations around plastic mitigation, and we got it done. Programming-wise, we do a lot of partnership with other people too, because we can't do it alone. It provides us an opportunity to kind of increase our resources in terms of like money to actually do the work, and then also additional hands to actually do the work itself. So those are the ways that we kind of partner.
How do you guys balance local activism with global initiatives or global environmental goals? Clearly, you're working at a local level, so how do you connect the dots between the two?
So it's all about coastline protection, right? So I guess the bigger picture is everybody's trying to combat climate change and trying to figure out what's the best way to kind of do that. But I think if you want to go global, you want to start in your own neighborhood. So what we do is we start off by working on coastline communities and then also trying to advance legislations and programming. And hopefully all of our efforts here can be scalable on a national sense. And then also it could also be connected to a dot to be global. But I think the only way you can actually achieve something on a global level is to start in your neighborhood.
Have you lived in New York City your entire life?
Yeah.
What sort of unique challenges do you see in NYC in relation to coastal preservation that you might not see on other coasts?
There's a few things. In terms of like coastal development, New York City is very dense. So I guess one of our biggest challenges is that we are outgrowing, we're outgrowing the city in general, and our infrastructure is actually outgrowing it. So to make a kind of like a harmonious way to kind of meet the standards of climate change and then also to make sure that we are protecting the coast, we have to kind of bridge those gaps. So I think the unique thing about New York City is that we like our coast, but what are the ways to make sure that we have beach lines and coastlines that are available for everyone while also making sure that people are actually thriving in the community where they live?
Makes sense. Could we talk about some of the Surfrider initiatives? Can you talk about the Blue Water Task Force?
The Blue Water Task Force is actually one of the national programs that Surfrider Foundation runs. In New York City, our Blue Water Task Force team is it's a team of individuals that are dedicated to actually going out into the water to test water quality. So in New York City, the water quality is only tested during the peak season, which is during the summer. And then during off season, nobody actually tests it. But everybody accesses the water throughout year round. So we want to make sure that, you know, it's regularly tested in time. So we have a team of volunteers who go up on a weekly basis. They take a sample of the water and then they kind of examine if it's clean or not. And then whatever is the result of the testing, we kind of post it up so that we can see if there are any, you know, increases in the bacteria in the water so that if it's high, then we can do something about it.
Gotcha. So if you do have high amounts of bacteria, what do you then do with that information?
So it's mostly for the public information. So what we do is like we educate. So if there is an increase, then we will say, oh, the water during this time period was really dirty. And then it will clean itself up naturally. So it's just a matter of like testing it again to make sure that, you know, the bacteria level goes down.
Gotcha. So you find that the levels are high. You want to distribute the information. How do you go about distributing that information so it gets to the people who need to know about it?
Yeah. So we post them on mostly on our Instagram page. So every test that we do, there's a little thing that kind of goes up and say, oh, this is the level. But there is a national database for Blue Water Task Force and all the information are entered in there. So collectively, not just in New York City, we can all see where, you know, there's an increase of bacteria in the water. So if there's a pattern along the coast, we can look at it from all the chapters.
Looking at a different initiative, so your Ocean Friendly Restaurants program, what is it and what impact have you seen from it?
Yeah, so Ocean Friendly Restaurant is working with restaurants to make them oceanally friendly. So what does that mean? So making sure that they don't use plastics and they don't contribute or whatever they're making in their restaurants is not ending up at the beach. And it's also kind of like a way to kind of make them think about, you know, the ocean and then their communities as they're, you know, selling their foods. So typically people put it in a little container. They typically are, you know, styrofoams or some kind of a plastic cup. So the ocean-friendly restaurant actually sets a standard of like, if you are an ocean-friendly restaurant, here are the things that you should follow. And what we do is we work with the restaurants to kind of make sure they actually adhere to that standards. And then we have a team of individuals that kind of audit. So they do, you know, secret shoppers and pop-ups, just kind of make sure that the restaurants are actually online. Because the restaurant gets a little, you know, sign on their door that they're an ocean-friendly restaurant. So far, from the partnership that we had some restaurants that are really good in keeping the standards, but it's not enough, especially in communities where you really want to have a to-go kind of like aspects to it. So it's something that we're working on, and we're trying to find more restaurants to be part of the program. It's not as big in New York yet, but in California, Hawaii, the ocean-friendly restaurants are actually really, you know, it's really growing.
So like these restaurants that get marked as ocean friendly, have you seen a positive response to that? Are more people engaging it because it's marked as an ocean friendly restaurant? What's the community response to these restaurants being marked that way?
If they are an ocean friendly restaurant, they get the backing of Surfrider. And then we promote them. So most of our events will happen at that restaurant, or we will, you know, make sure that they get elevated for the causes we're trying to do. On the community side, if you are someone who cares about the ocean and you know this is an ocean-friendly restaurant, I assume you would kind of go to them. And being ocean-friendly restaurant, or being a ocean-friendly restaurant, they have some unique aspects to it because they really have to meet the standards. It's amazing how they're doing that. So there's a restaurant in Brooklyn that we're working with who is an ocean-friendly restaurant. They're a cafe. What they have is, like, they have a clay pottery studio at the back. So that's how they make their bowls and their cups, and that's what you use at the coffee shop.
Another thing Surfrider is working on is the ocean-friendly gardens, which, like the ocean-friendly restaurants, is a collaborative initiative.
It's something that we are really, you know, pushing forward. It's one of the ways that we can actually mitigate coastal flooding, or flooding in general. So right now, we are identifying parcels of land here in the Rockaway, and we are building gardens. These gardens will help filter out some of the debris that are going through the water, and then also it kind of helps with the mitigation for coastal flooding. So far, we've been successful for it, and we just want to build out more. It's just a matter of, like, finding the right partners so that we can identify parcels of land that we can kind of own over time and then kind of build out these gardens.
So do these partners find the parcels of land, or are you guys finding them, or is it together, or, like, who finds them?
Yeah, so it's together. So a lot of the lands here are owned by the city. So it's like trying to figure out and navigating the bureaucracy of the city to kind of figure out how to kind of own it. So once we take control of the land, then we'll do our planting. That's one way to kind of do it. And then, of course, there's the maintenance aspects of it, and that's going to be the second part.
Cool. So have you developed any recently that you have seen do what they're supposed to do, like mitigate the flooding and all that? Or is it too new of a project that you haven't fully seen the full impact yet?
I think they're too new. We haven't seen the impact yet. On a national scale, yes. So we've seen models in California of these ocean-friendly gardens. But in New York City, the two gardens that we have, they're working, they're doing what they're supposed to do, but we haven't seen the full impact. And we want to make sure that we do it more, so that we can kind of, like, test out if it's actually working here.
Jumping off that, what are some challenges of living on the coast? And where do you see the biggest gap in education about those challenges?
Oh, yeah. So there's a few. If you live on the coast, there's a tendency of flooding. And what are the causes of that flooding? It varies. So that's one thing that, you know, that people should understand. Like, and then the other thing is just, like, water safety in general. So if you are located in coastline communities like Rockaways that have been impacted by Sandy, you want to make sure that you have the fundamentals of, like, water safety. Because if the water goes up, how can you, you know, protect yourselves in the surge? So that is an educational component that needs to be bridged, especially in this community.
Gotcha. And how do you guys go about bridging it? Is it through these different issues you have, or, like, how do you do local outreach?
So we do local outreach to our partnerships with the local communities, and then we're still part of the Water Safety Coalition that's really trying to advance that forward. And just frankly, from just, like, doing some educational workshops, essentially. So working with, like, the local surf shops, and then also some of the community-based organizations out here, just kind of talk about, like, how do you protect yourself when the water goes up?
Is there a message you would like to share about why it's so important to be caring about our coast and beaches and ocean?
We've seen the impact of Sandy in terms of, like, this community. We've seen the changes or the impact of climate change in New York City over time. And so I think the message here is that how can we make sure that we can continue to enjoy the coastline and the water we like to protect, and then also kind of keep going with our surfing, because that's the main thing. It's like we want to make sure that we have access to good water and good waves so that we can continue to do what we love, which is to surf. But to be able to do that, you have to also think about the coastline and how to kind of protect it. So I think that's my main message. It's like you can't have each one, you have to do both.
Cool. What is the Rise Above Plastics campaign, and then how big is plastic pollution a problem in New York City?
It's a campaign to really mitigate plastic pollution in New York City. So it's backed by multiple different initiatives. So Skip the Stuff is one of them. And then the other one is the the plastic bag. So now we have tote bags instead of plastic bags. Those are the things that kind of came out of the rise of plastics. In New York City, there's a lot of plastics. You'll see them because people are still using plastic bags and then they're still takeout containers. We're trying to change behavior so that there will be less plastics. And that's what Skip the Stuff is for, right? So when you order food, instead of like, you know, asking them to give you more stuff like utensils and then those ketchup packets, if you don't need them, then it's most like an opt-in rather than an opt-out. So less plastic going your way, less plastic in the ocean, less plastic in the neighborhood.
Can you talk to me about the Rockaway Youth Program and then how you're engaging young people in the coastal protection initiatives?
Yeah, so the Rockaway Youth Program is something that we've done for quite a while now, and it's one of the things that actually grew at Surfrider. So the initiative is designed to connect with the young adults so that we can kind of cultivate an interest in surfing, so that over time, they will be the folks that will be advocating for the ocean legislations and advocacy that we kind of, you know, do. So we're not as active as we used to in terms of our youth programs, but what we've done is that we've actually, we partner with organizations that has, you know, kids, and we try to educate them about initiatives and programming to, you know, clean the oceans and then to advance coastal friendly legislations. So that way, as they are learning how to surf and, you know, increasing their knowledge about the water and then also being part of the community, then over time they'll be the people who's going to be helping us push any agenda forward.
Cool. So just, I guess, in general, how does Surfrider measure the impact and success of your program? So you have all these different initiatives. How do you determine if they are
working
successful? Yeah,
yeah,
working.
So our biggest impact is when we pass a bill or pass a campaign or a campaign gets a successful pass, because if we do that, then it means that we're moving something forward.
What are some pieces of legislation you have been involved with, and how are you supporting them?
There's a few things that we are trying to push right now. So one thing that we're trying to push is water station across New York City. So more water stations so that people are not buying plastic water bottles, encouraging to actually bring their own bottle and then making that available for everyone so that you can actually tap water on any park or any communities that you go to. So that's one thing that we're pushing right now. The other thing is Climate Change Superfund Act. So making sure that big companies pay for climate change mitigations. So that's one thing that we're trying to push. So hopefully the governor will sign that legislation forward by, I guess, early next year. So those are the things that we are trying to advance. And it's really about trying to identify things that are directly related to the ocean or pieces of legislation that would improve coastal resilience over time.
How more specifically do you engage with local policymakers? If you have this idea, this campaign you want to support, how do you actually go about executing that?
So if we think of something, we create a coalition around it. So for instance, water safety is something that is important in New York City, especially in this neighborhood. So people who live by the Rockaway, well, by the ocean, folks in the Rockaway, a lot of them don't know how to swim. But there's an ocean right here, so you want to make sure that everybody has the fundamentals of water safety, essentially. So what we do is we partner with organizations who have some kind of an idea around that particular content, and then we try to strategize around what would be a campaign would look like and what type of legislation would we want to advance. And then from there, we just do our lobbying efforts and advocacy effort as much as we can. We go in front of, you know, the representatives, local and also statewide, to kind of make sure that, you know, our voices are being heard. We have lobby days, so we have our team and our members go up either in D.C. or go down to D.C. or go up to Albany to kind of talk about some of the issues that is concerning about in our neighborhoods, and then also to kind of push some of the legislation that we are trying to push forward. So those are the ways that we kind of work with local policymakers. On the research side of it, we partner with organizations who are, you know, establishing research about like plastic pollutions and other aspects, because those are evidence that we can kind of bring in when we do our advocacy efforts. So as much as possible, where we can contribute either our data, our mindset, or our ability to kind of create coalitions, that's how we kind of get ourselves forward so that we can advance our agenda to actually protect the coast and then also kind of meet with policymakers who are making those change.
So if somebody wants to get involved with some of this lobbying stuff, how would they do it?
Yeah, so very easy. So number one, just become a member of Surfrider. That's one thing. And then the lobby day, there are certain dates we have them. So we just kind of tell all of our members, if you're interested, make sure you have that day free. Hop on a bus, hop on a train, and I will take you up.
How often do you have lobby days?
I think we have it about twice a year. So during the height of the legislative session, so one for Albany, first quarter, and then same for like DC, so first and second quarter of the year.
Gotcha. Have you yourself participated in these?
Yeah.
Can you talk about what it looked like when you were doing it?
For the Albany Lobby Day, so we go with other organizations that we partner with, and then we talk to the elected officials that are within our community. One way that we can actually get those meetings is that if you have folks that lives in their districts. So that's how we kind of line up all those interviews. For the Lobby Day in DC, that's actually a national Surfrider effort. So all the chapters and the national office Surfrider go down to DC. And then same thing, we have a lineup of like representatives that we meet. And then we kind of go in and talk about some of the policies and issues that kind of face in our community locally so that, you know, it can spur some kind of an idea or legislation to kind of mitigate those, or partnerships.
Looking ahead, what are some upcoming projects or initiatives that Surfrider is working on or the NYC chapter is working on that you're excited about?
Yeah, so climate change is something that we are really focusing on right now as much as possible. So anything that has to do with coastline protection, both in legislation, we're going to try to push that. And then also in actual hard and gray buildings, essentially. So making more, you know, ocean-friendly gardens or trying to figure out how to kind of help the city kind of figure out some of the mitigation to to prevent coastline flooding are the things that we're kind of like pushing for right now. So in programming, that's one thing. And then on the other side, it's just making sure that the community is aware of like the challenges of living on the coast and what are some of the potential solutions that could happen in actually, you know, improving it, and how could they be involved in doing that process.
I would like to thank Mo for taking the time to be interviewed, as well as Surfrider for all of the great work that they do. If you would like to connect with Surfrider, their information will be in the description. If you're on Spotify or YouTube, go ahead and drop a comment about what you found most enlightening about this conversation, and I will see all of you guys in the next episode.